You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Hello, 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 Miami Dolphin fans, and welcome to the Same Old Dolphin Show, part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I'm Josh Kotzker. With me today is my brother from the exact same mother, Aaron the Brain. Aaron, say hello to the people.
Hello to the people.
Brain, I gotta ask you. How's your internet doing today? Because the last time anybody on this network tried to have you on the podcast, it was a complete disaster from where you were.
So far, so good. Fingers are crossed.
Good. Because, I mean, if this turns into a Josh Kotzker solo show, it's going to be, whew, it's going to be wild. Might have to bust out some My Acoustic Side Project songs.
No, we don't want that.
Nobody wants that. Nobody needs that. In their life in the year of our Lord 2024. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. We're glad you could be here tonight. Before we get started, real quick reminder, make sure you're following us at Amplified to Rock, at Aaron the Brain on X, which you can find at twitter.com. I don't think I can make that joke anymore because I think twitter.com is actually no longer a thing, supposedly. But you can follow us there on the Bird site. You can follow us on any of the places you can find us, Threads, I guess. I don't know. Follow us. If you haven't done so already, take a second right now. Smash the like button on this video. Subscribe to the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel. Shout out to everybody joining us live in the chat. Let us know where you are. Let us know where you're watching from. We're good to see you. We got some of our good friends here in the chat. Cap for Life is in the house. We got JM Santos in the house. Jordan Murray's in the house. Raphael's in the house. Adam's in the house. A lot of folks in the house tonight. So thanks for joining us in the chat. Go ahead, smash that like button. Shout out as well to everybody watching on the I'm a Miami Dolphin Fan Facebook page. Thank you for joining us. And of course, if you haven't subscribed to the Same Old Dolphin Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever it is you get your podcasts, do that, please. And leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, would you? We appreciate that very, very much. So, Brent, we got a lot to talk about. We got to talk about this Miami Dolphins schedule because you didn't really get a chance to give a lot of feedback on that because your internet exploded. So we want to get your thoughts on that. We're also going to give some way too early record predictions for the Miami Dolphins based on what the schedule is. We're also going to talk a little bit about Tua Tagovailoa, who reported to OTAs, everybody. He's not holding out. He reported. Everybody's operating in good faith here. So everybody can relax a little bit on that. But we're going to talk a little bit about Tua because what would a Dolphins offseason be without talking about Tua a little bit? So we'll talk about that. But Brain, before we get into any of that, we got some breaking news right before we went on the air Monday night. In fact, you might not even be aware of this yet. So let me read you the tweet from Adam Schefter. Are you ready?
Let's do it. I have not heard anything. I literally stopped working like a little over an hour ago and I had time to eat and take a shower. So
fantastic. Whatever it is that you're thinking is not what I'm about to tell you. After 9 NFL seasons, reads the tweet from Adam Schefter, Eagles wide receiver Devontae Parker has decided to retire, he said Monday night. As much as he looked forward to his time with the Eagles, Parker decided the time had come to spend more time with his family, and that includes his 4 children. I want to see my kids, spend quality time with them, Parker said. I want to be there for them whenever I can. The 31-year-old Parker is walking away from the NFL and looks forward to whatever is next, though he has no definitive short-term professional plans. I'm just going to take things slowly, Parker said. Parker finished his NFL career with 369 catches for 5,266 yards and 27 receiving touchdowns, Schefter goes on to add, asked what he'll most remember about his NFL career, Devontae Parker said, the camaraderie, the brotherhood in the locker room on whichever team it was. Everyone always welcomed me with open arms, and I appreciated them for that. I also appreciate the Dolphins for drafting me and giving me the opportunity. I always will have love for the Dolphins and their organization. And I want to thank all the teams, the Patriots and the Eagles too, but the Dolphins were the first team, and I really want to thank them. Brain, Uncle Vontae says goodbye. He's hanging it up. So I got to know, Brain, and I want to ask everybody in the chat as well here, what is your favorite Devontae Parker memory?
Don't know. I can't even think of like a specific Devontae Parker memory. I mean, the one that comes to mind is like so irrelevant, but it was, I guess it was like the last year of his rookie deal. And it was right before the trade deadline. And they had like the feature Devontae Parker game. And he had like 100 yards in like the first half. I feel like it was against the Eagles, actually. I don't remember for sure, but he had like some monster breakout game. And it was basically like the best we've ever seen of Devontae Parker.
Mike Dolphins Talk Mike says his favorite memory of Devontae Parker was the day we traded him for a third round pick.
Great deal.
I mean, it was a good deal. Look, in all actuality, Devontae Parker, I mean, reflecting on his Dolphins career, this was a guy who, Dolphins took him 7th overall or something like that.
I think he was like 11th or something.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins drafted him.
First round pick.
Yeah, he was a first round pick for the Dolphins in 2015. And I mean, you know, quite frankly, his career with the Dolphins was marked by, you know, an inability to stay healthy. But in 2019, he did manage to stay healthy, did manage to play 16 games for the Dolphins, caught 72 passes on 128 targets for 1,202 yards, averaging 16.7 yards per catch, had 9 touchdowns, his long being 51 yards. So, you know, he was kind of at his best towards, well, in that 19 and 20 seasons, his final seasons with the Dolphins, again, marred by injury, as it often was with Devontae Parker. But if I had to tell you what my favorite memory is of Devontae Parker, and this is specifically for the YouTube folks, because if you're not on YouTube, you won't be able to appreciate this. But my favorite Devontae Parker memory is this photo. I mean, that's like Uncle Vontae's got something cooking for you. That photo is unbelievable. But in all seriousness, I wish Devontae Parker the best. I think it is one of those things, we talk about it all the time. NFL football is a physical game, and it takes a toll on players, and especially a player like Devontae Parker, who was injured so often. When the passion for the game is gone, it's time to go. And at 31 years old, this is a guy with literally his entire life in front of him still. So to make that decision to walk away and to be able to walk away and to have, you know, some money saved up to be able to walk away to spend some time with the kids, I think is absolutely something worth doing for Devontae Parker. So we wish him well. The Same Old Dolphin Show wishes Devontae Parker well. And hopefully he goes off and rides into the sunset and lives a happy and healthy life for very many years. You know, also shout out to the Did Miami Trade DVP Twitter account, which was a wonderful thing until the Dolphins eventually did, in fact, trade Devontae Parker. So anyway, thanks for being with us, Devontae Parker. And again, everybody in the chat, let us know what your favorite Devontae Parker memory was. But from there, Brian, let's talk a little bit about Tua Tagovailoa, shall we? Can we talk a little bit about Tua?
Why not? Everybody else is.
Everybody else is. It's true. So Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports sent out a tweet on May 17th. So that was, last Friday. And he said, the headline to his article read, Tua Tagovailoa has been mostly absent from Dolphins activities as Miami quarterback looks for next big contract. And the way he phrased some things in his column. He basically said, sources believe his absence is related to his contract status. And what he said, you know, before that, he says Tagovailoa has been absent for the majority of voluntary offseason work since the Dolphins reported back on April 15th. Sources close to the situation told CBS Sports. But of course, we also had gotten plenty of reports that he had been in the building, that some of these rookie receivers, Malik Washington, Taj Washington, had already caught passes from him and he had been around. Well, then we get a tweet from Chris Kaufman of Five Reasons Sports, who says he sent out a tweet originally that said, curious how much of the missed voluntary workouts are due to Tua shuttling back and forth to California, where he's working with a quarterback coach, which we know the Dolphins are enthusiastic about. And then he followed that up by saying he was told by a league source that Tua Tagovailoa has indeed been in California at times, being trained by his quarterback coaches at 3DQB, that when he's back in Miami, he's been at team facilities, and that while he hasn't always worked out, he has been attending the meetings. So, I mean, this all sounds very much par for the course, but you had a lot of people blowing this up and talking about, well, he's holding out and I can't believe this. And it was righteous indignation and everybody was upset. And then we got a report that said that Tua had been offered a contract by the Miami Dolphins and rejected the offer, which to me is not terribly surprising, because of course the Dolphins are going to come in with a number that is going to be too low for Tagovailoa in his camp, especially in light of the contract that Jared Goff got that has basically set the market. So Tua is going to be asking for something in that ballpark, right? And so there's much consternation, as there always is, anytime there is any kind of conversation with Tua Tagovailoa. But then today, lo and behold, he shows up at day one of official day one of OTAs, which was today, Monday, the 20th. He shows up, he's there, he's participating, he's throwing the ball, he's involved, he's very much participating in OTAs. He's not holding out. So the conversation is that the negotiations seem to be going on in good faith and that the sides are going back and forth, and eventually they're going to land at a number that works. They're going to land at terms that work, and this thing is going to move forward. I have no reason to believe at this point that it's not, but I need to know your thoughts on this entire situation, Brain, because it seems like anytime there's any conversation at all around Tua Tagovailoa, there's just heat coming from all sides.
What's today's date? Today is May 20th. Oh, okay.
And training camp starts when? Usually like last week in July?
Yeah, July, second last August. Week in
2 months, basically. We're 2 months out from training camp.
Sure. I'll give it 2 months.
If we go into training camp and there's no contract and Tua doesn't show up for training camp, then I'll be concerned. At this point, it's a contract negotiation. He's showing up, which means he's not overly concerned. The media is going to make, I mean, how many off seasons do we need to go through where the media uses Tua for clicks before we realize this is just going to be what happens every single offseason? There's nothing here. There's literally nothing to freak out about. There's nothing to be overly concerned about. I get that it's a 24-hour news cycle and every little piece of information is going to get some sort of reaction, but it doesn't need an over-the-top reaction. All this is there's a contract negotiation happening.
Right.
The Dolphins made an offer. He rejected it. He wants more money. That's literally every contract negotiation that's ever happened.
Ever.
Is the team offers the player something and the player's agent comes back and says, no, I think you can do better.
There it
We're
is.
We're talking about lots of money here. It's going to be a huge contract. His agent would be doing a disservice if he just takes the first deal, no matter what that deal looks like.
Yeah.
The agent would be doing his client a disservice if he just takes it.
Yeah. So there's, in other words, there's no there. There's nothing to be upset about here. There's nothing to worry about here. I think everything everything that we're seeing indicates that relations are good, that everything is fine between Tua's camp and the Dolphins, and that a deal is going to get done. Whether you believe a deal should get done, whether you are, as a fan, believe that the Dolphins should or should not give Tua Tagovailoa money in the range of what Jared Goff received in that $50 million range, I mean, that's what it's going to, that's where this is going to be. It's where we're going to end up. If, like, I know that some people are thinking he needs to have like a, you know, whatever the mid-tier quarterback money is, Daniel Jones kind of money. But like, there's no way that Tua, after leading the league in passing, is going to have his camp settle for Daniel Jones type money, even in light of, you know, his injury history. Like, there's no way. The Dolphins will probably put all kinds of, they might put incentives in there. They may put, you know, hoops for him to jump through, but there's no way that when that deal is done, that AAV isn't right up there with Jared Goff. And I would argue, you know, that it's funny. There was some speculation, and I think it was Scott Boras actually, who made a comment, something along the lines of, or not Scott Boras, Drew Rosenhaus. Scott Boras, you know, I'm getting my agents mixed up here, but he said something along the lines of, you know, Tua and Trevor Lawrence are going to demand money similar to what Jared Goff is making. And I'm here to tell you that Tua has more claim to that kind of money than Trevor Lawrence does, frankly.
Yeah, well, especially at this point. Well, it's a different situation because Tua was drafted a year earlier. And so the way that these things get reported as far as like new money versus what the actual contract is, Trevor Lawrence has got 2 years left on his deal. Tua has got 1 year left on his deal. But when it comes to new money, yeah, they're both going to be, I would imagine they're both going to be shooting to be higher AAV than,
yeah,
than
Jared I would think
Goff.
So.
They're probably going to be closer to $54-55 million a year. And at the end of the day, you just got to get comfortable with it, because like, if you're going to get all pissy about the difference between a couple million dollars per year on your quarterback contract, and then you go into the, and because of it, you end up with an unhappy Tua going into this year, and then you've got him at his current cap space, well, then that's going to make it more difficult for you to really accomplish everything that you want post June 1st. And more importantly, when his contract expires and he hits the open market, you're probably going to have to pay more than that to keep him, or you're going to have to franchise him. And if you franchise him, well, that's going to open up a whole other ball of wax as far as getting cap compliant and cutting the fat. Because if you end up franchising Tua next year, I don't know how you're fitting in a lot of these big money contracts that either you have guys already under contract or guys that are going to be signing big contracts, like your Jalen Waddles and your Jalen Phillips and your Javon Hollins of the world.
And the other thing, the other part of this is that there's no, you know, if you're the Miami Dolphins, there's no alternative right now. Like, there's no, yeah, you're right. You could not pay Tua, and you could decide to franchise him next year, and you could decide to franchise him the year after that. And you can deal with the consequences of that. But what I'm saying is that based on how things have progressed, the Dolphins have tied themselves to Tua Tagovailoa. There is no world where the Dolphins are going to shift out of it and suddenly bring in some other quarterback, because frankly, I don't know that there's some other quarterback that's out there that's going to run this offense better than Tua Tagovailoa is going to. So Tua Tagovailoa is the Dolphins' quarterback. So they're going to pay him because he is their guy. And that's all there is to it. What do you want the Dolphins to do? Not let Tua play on his rookie deal, and then you know, and let's say they play out the season on his rookie deal, and something terrible happens, right? or he has a terrible season. Okay. Yeah, that's a gamble situation where they can probably turn around and try to pay him less. But you know, what is the alternative in terms of a quarterback? Are they going to make a trade? Are they going to sign a free agent? And is whoever that person is going to be better than Tua? I don't think so.
Well, and the other part of that is that you're going to give him a contract extension, and the people that are like unhappy with the idea of paying Tua all that money. Like, you do realize that when they sign these contract extensions, their cap numbers the first few years
are
going to be very manageable cap numbers. Yes.
That's the whole point.
You want to give him a 2-year deal with a, you know, a mid-tier quarterback salary? That's what he's going to get anyway.
Yes.
So just sign him. And, you know, if in 3 years it doesn't work out, then you get out from under that contract anyway. But at this point, the team has hitched their wagon to them. They've already made significant decisions to not bring back guys.
Yes.
Because they're planning on paying Tua. So whether it's for the good, for the bad, for the better, for the worse, whatever it is, for the next 3 years, maybe 4 years, Tua Tagovailoa is going to be your quarterback. And that's either going to be great for this team or it's going to be bad for this team. But the time of debating whether or not that should be the case is so 2023.
Yeah, the ship has sailed. It's done. This is the guy. And as somebody pointed out in the chat, if the Dolphins, they sign Tua to that big contract and it doesn't work out, then that's the end of Chris Greer and that's the end of Mike McDaniel in Miami, because they're all attached at the hip. It all has one to do with the other. So that's the deal at this point. So I believe a deal is going to get done, and there's nothing that I have heard that leads me to believe that that is not the case. So we'll see if anything changes, but that's the end of the deal. Okay. So let's turn our attention away from Tua, because that situation is going to be what it is, and it'll play out the way it plays out. And we'll be here to talk about it once that deal gets done. But Brain, we have, should we do a pulse check now, or should we do the schedule first?
Let's do the schedule first.
All right.
Let's end with the pulse check.
All right. So we're going to reveal the Dolphin. We're going to talk a little bit about the schedule here. And this is kind of cold takes by now, because the schedule's been out for almost a week now. But the Dolphins 2024 schedule was released. And to me, this is always one of those things that's kind of a lot of fuss about nothing, because it's like we already knew who they were going to play. It was just a matter of figuring out the order. And really, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is you want to find out where the bye is, and you want to find out where your travel is, and when you have to go to the cold weather places. Like, that's it. Like, it's not a lot of, you know who you're going to play already. But just in case, to review, Dolphins open the season at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars, week 2, at home on Thursday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills. Then they travel to Seattle to take on the Seattle Seahawks. Following week, at home on Monday Night Football against the Tennessee Titans. Then they travel to New England to take on the Patriots in week 5 before they have a week 6 bye. In week 7, they travel to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. Then they come home in week 8 to take on the Arizona Cardinals. In week 9, in early November, they travel to Buffalo to take on the Bills, at which point they will be done with the Bills for the regular season. Then week 10, they travel across the country for a Monday Night Football game against the Los Angeles Rams. Week 11, they're back home against Christian Wilkins and the Las Vegas Raiders, followed by week 12, home against the Patriots. Week 13, they play on Thanksgiving in the evening at Lambeau against the Packers. They come home for week 14 against the New York Jets. Week 15, on the road at Houston and the Houston Texans. Week 16, at home against the San Francisco 49ers. And then they close the season in week 17 and 18 at Cleveland on Sunday Night Football, and closing the season finale at the Meadowlands against the New York Jets. Brain, when you look at the season, when you look at the schedule, let's take it sort of bit by bit. Let's take a look at the pre-bye section, okay? So before the bye, they're at home against Jacksonville, at home against Buffalo on Thursday night, at Seattle, at home against Tennessee on Monday Night Football, and at New England. That's the first 5 weeks of the season. How does that feel to you?
It feels pretty solid. I mean, you should get off to, well, I don't know. I mean, the Jacks, it kind of depends that how you do in those first two games. I look at those, like everybody's penciling in a W for the home game against Jacksonville. And I would tend to agree that we should be favored. And I think we are favored at the moment. But that's not going to be an easy game. The week two game at home against Buffalo, I like getting Buffalo at home in September. I don't love that it's at night, but granted, you know, the way the weather has been, I mean, it's the middle of May right now, and it's like at 8:15, it's literally 90 degrees outside in South Florida. So
yeah.
It's still going to be hot and humid.
What do you make of that? What do you make of the, I don't know if you want to call it a conspiracy theory or the theory? The idea that the NFL has decided to take away those 1 o'clock games early in the season for the Miami Dolphins at home, with the exception of week one against the Jaguars. No.
So it's a million percent in belief of this, because it's not just that in the first, month of the season, we only get 1 1 o'clock game and it's a home game against Jacksonville. It's that our next 1 o'clock home game is in week eight against Arizona. It's still kind of hot in October. I mean, that's right on the cusp of when it starts to kind of get bearable at 1 o'clock, but we get it at home against Arizona, another warm weather team. And then our next home game at 1 o'clock is against Las Vegas. We don't get a home game at 1 o'clock against a team that is not used to playing in sweltering heat until Thanksgiving or the weekend before Thanksgiving against the New England Patriots.
Well, it's worth noting that both the Cardinals and the Raiders play in climate controlled stadiums.
That's fair, but maybe they practice in climate controlled stadiums. But
I don't know. I watched that. What was the Amazon show that they followed the Cardinals around for a full season? It was like Hard Knocks, but it was like a All or Nothing. Was that it? The All or Nothing show that they followed the Cardinals for an entire season during the regular season. They were practicing outside.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, like, you still have the home field advantage because, like, the sun's going to beat down on the opposing team's sidelines, and there's going to be like a 20 to 30 degree difference as far as the heat index between the home sideline and the road sideline. But it just feels kind of like, if you're going to do that, then don't make us go to Cleveland and New York in January.
Sure. And they did, like, not avoid that.
If that's
that.
The case, like, I'm not complaining about us going to Cleveland or New York in January, but make one of those teams come here and play a 1 o'clock game in September or October.
Sure. And of course the Jets, don't come to play the Dolphins until week 14. So yeah, the most of the hot, horrible weather is gone by that point. So, I mean, that's early December by the time that's happening. So, great. So, Brain, what do you have the Dolphins record looking like by the time they get to that bye in week six?
I look at those first three games, and I mean, I feel like they're all winnable, but I feel like they're all losable. I guess the one I feel the most confident about is probably the road game at Seattle, but that's going all the way to the West Coast playing Buffalo the week before. So it has that like potential letdown feel to it. I think you're going to lose one of those games. If I had to guess, it's probably going to be the Bills game, because that team has your number. And until you actually can exercise those demons, and I realize we beat them a couple years ago down here, but it's a very fluky kind of win. Until you can really exercise those demons, it's hard for me to pick them to win that game. I think we'll take care of business Monday night. We'll get our revenge on Tennessee, and then at New England, getting them in October. That team's kind of a mess. So I would be disappointed if we were less than 4-1. I see a pathway for us to potentially be 5-0. I see a pathway for us to being 3-2. But if I had to guess, I would say we're probably going to be 4-1 there.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I think that Seattle game is a much trickier game than a lot of people are thinking about it at. But I actually think the Dolphins hosting the Bills on a short week where the Bills have to travel to Miami. The Bills have a lot of new pieces that they're going to be trying to figure out. And, you know, as we've seen in the last couple of years with Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins are unveiling a lot of different things in their offense, and they're typically healthy at the beginning of the season. I think the Dolphins are actually going to win that game against the Bills. I actually have the Dolphins going to the bye at a 5-0 record. So
ooh, look
there
at
we go.
You.
So how about it? So there it is. Let's continue through the schedule here, Brain. So we got that week 6 bye. Then the Dolphins travel to Indianapolis in week 7, home against the Cardinals in week 8, at Buffalo in week 9, and at the Rams on Monday Night Football in week 10. How do you feel about that next 4-game stretch, Brain? And granted, these are the way too early predictions, right? But how do you feel about those 4 games right there?
I mean, you know, if you're going to play a road game at Indianapolis, you know, you get it coming off of a bye. I feel good about that. I think we're a better team than Indianapolis. I think as far as playing indoors in a weather controlled environment, I think that's perfect for a team like Miami that boasts as much speed and weaponry as they do. I think that's a great way to come out of the bye. And then you come home and play Arizona. I love that. A team coming West Coast to East Coast for a 1 o'clock start. You know, Arizona is a team that I think is still kind of going through an identity crisis. And so I love that. And then I think you get like a big time test in back-to-back road games at Buffalo and at LA. You know, if it's hard to pick Miami to win at home against Buffalo, it's even harder to pick them to win on the road in Buffalo. That said, November 3rd, there's a good chance the weather's going to be pretty nice for that game. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it could be blustery. It could be windy. It could be
that rainy. Time of year, you could get literally any conditions in Buffalo.
But that said, it's still a road game in Buffalo.
Yes.
So hard to pick the Dolphins to win that game. And then I like getting the extra day of rest coming off of that, but then you have to go across the country to LA. I think if you come off of a loss against Buffalo, you're really going to feel like there's a lot of pressure to bounce back. I think that, you know, the Rams, while I think they're going to be good, I think there's going to be a massive hole in the middle of that defense without Aaron Donald. And so I think the Dolphins will do enough to get a win in that one. I think that home game against the Raiders, the return of Christian Wilkins, that's a sneaky, difficult game. It's not so much the opponent, although this is an opponent that, remember, gave Miami a really tough matchup at home last year. But it's also the travel prior to that, because yes, you do get that extra day of rest going from Buffalo across country to LA, but now you get a short week coming back home to play the Raiders, who are going to be a very physical team. I feel like it's a win, but I'm not going to be surprised if they lose that game. It just feels like a sneaky trap game, especially if you're going into the back-to-back road games against Buffalo and LA, and everybody's going to talk it up as this is the big test, back-to-back road games against two playoff-caliber teams, and then you come out, you get a big win at Los Angeles. I could totally see you regressing the following week and losing at home against Vegas. But then at home against the Patriots, that...
Well, hold on. You're getting ahead of yourself. So those 5 games right there, what do you think the Dolphins' record is in those 5 games? Indianapolis, at Indianapolis, home against Arizona, at Buffalo, at the Rams, and home against the Raiders.
Okay. I'm going to say you get a win against Indy, you get a win against Arizona, you lose at Buffalo, you win at the Rams. The Dolphins are going to lose a stupid game somewhere. They didn't lose a stupid game last year. Oh, wait, no, they did. The Tennessee game. Yeah, so
yes,
this is going
to
be
the cost them the whole thing. Yeah, that basically ruined the season.
This is going to be the stupid game. They're going to lose a stupid game. This one's built in there. They're going to lose that home game against Vegas. So they'll go 3-2 in that stretch.
Yeah, so you got the Dolphins at 8-2. I actually have the Dolphins losing that game in Indianapolis.
No, I have them at...
Yes, 8-2.
No, I had them at 4-1 and then 3-2. So that's 7-3.
Oh, 7-3. My bad. So, so 7-3 is where you have them. Yeah, I have them losing that game at Indianapolis, even out of the bye. I just, something about it tells me that that's a loss for them. I think they'll beat Arizona. I think they'll lose in Buffalo because I don't believe this Dolphins team can win in Buffalo until they show me that they can win in Buffalo. And then I think they'll beat the Rams. The Rams are not a team that scares me very much. And the Raiders, even with the short week coming home back across the country, are you playing quarterback for the Raiders, Brain?
Well, I think it'll be Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, none of those guys scare me. I got the Dolphins winning that one. So I've got the Dolphins through 10 games. I've got the Dolphins with an 8-2 record, Bren. Then we have, let's handle these next three games here. Okay, let's talk about the next three games. Home against the Patriots, at Green Bay on Thanksgiving, and home against the Jets in week 14.
It's going to be chalk for me. You're going to win the home game against the Patriots in Lambeau Thanksgiving. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. Sure, I could see the Dolphins winning, but am I going to pick them to win that game? No. I think things are going to start getting cold. You're playing in Lambeau. It's a big road test. Green Bay, I think, is going to be the more physical team, and this is where my concerns for this team and the way it's been built are going to really come to a head, because I think this team, in spite of their late season collapses the last 2 years, I think that this team is built for September and October. And so I think this is, and the schedule makers have made it difficult for them coming down the stretch. And I think this is going to be a struggle for them. So at Green Bay, I think that's a loss. But getting the Jets at home early December, coming off of, you know, you get a long week of rest, coming out of the Thanksgiving game, give me a win. So I say they go 2-1 in this stretch. They come out of this stretch 9-4.
Yep, I also have the Dolphins going 9-1 in that stretch, or going 2-1 in that stretch, beating the Patriots, losing in Green Bay on Thanksgiving, and then winning at home against the Jets. That game on Thanksgiving, fine, great, gonna be a lot of fun, but that's gonna be a tough place to play, especially with the Packers being on the up and being at home in a cold weather game in the evening in Lambeau. That's going to be a pretty cold weather game, I think. I mean, there's a possibility that it's not, but I think it's going to be a pretty chilly one there. So I think that's a loss for the Dolphins. So I've got the Dolphins sitting at 10-3.
Yeah, you're with 10-3. I'm at 9-4
with four games to play. So this is, you know, that is territory that is not unfamiliar territory for the Dolphins with a month left, with four games left in the season, right? It's not unfamiliar for them to be sitting at 9-4, 10-3, big record, looking like they've got, probably at that point, if they're at 10-3, they're probably sitting there with an opportunity to control their own destiny in terms of the number one seed overall, which, as we've said on this show many times, is one of the things the Dolphins really need. This whole season, you know, if you're the Dolphins, you're trying to gear things towards being that number one seed. It is very important because we've seen that the Dolphins don't perform well in those cold weather games. And you can say that the narrative is BS, but show me the evidence that proves that the Dolphins can perform in cold weather games. And it doesn't exist. It's not real. The Dolphins are bad in cold weather. So that leads us to the final four games of the season. At Houston, home against the 49ers, at Cleveland, at the Jets. Brain, at Houston, at 49ers, at Cleveland, at the Jets.
Home against the 49ers.
Home against the 49ers, excuse me. Take me through those final four games of the season.
I mean, this is a brutal stretch.
It is a brutal stretch to close the season.
Because if the Jets are good, this looks like it could be four playoff teams that you're playing. Three of the four are on the road, and the last two are going to be in cold weather. And the easiest of the games, in my opinion, is at Houston. I mean, you could make a case that the easiest one could be at the Jets, and I could see that. It's just a matter of whether you think the Jets are going to be really good, whether they're healthy, you know, what's Aaron Rodgers look like. I don't know. I think that Houston is not a terrible matchup for Miami, and playing in Houston, I don't think scares me. So I'm not going to be surprised if we win that game, but I'm not going to be surprised. To me, that's a pick 'em game. The home game against the 49ers, I love that it's at home. I just think the San Francisco 49ers are probably the better team. And so that, especially, I mean, granted, it's at home. So, you know, the weather's going to be nice. So it's not going to be necessarily this game where you need to play smash mouth football. Can I see us winning a home game against San Francisco? Yeah, I could. If I had to guess, I'd say we're going to split the Houston and San Francisco games. I don't know which one we're going to win, which one we're going to lose, but I think we'll find a way to win one of them. At Cleveland, I think Cleveland's going to be really good. I think their roster is extremely deep, very much complete, and the only question mark about that team is whether or not Deshaun Watson is finally going to figure it out and revert to form that he was, you know, pre-2020.
That's kind of a significant question.
Yeah, it's a significant question. But that said, this was a team that was as hot as anybody in the league last year. And they went down the stretch with Joe Flacco. Like, they don't need Deshaun Watson to be the Deshaun Watson from a few years ago. They just need him to be as good as Joe Flacco was at the end of last year, which I think is a reasonable expectation. I think Cleveland's going to be really good and they're going to be particularly good in the trenches, which again, in the cold weather, against a really elite defense and a team that's going to want to run the football, I think you're going to miss a guy like Christian Wilkins. I think the Dolphins, the way they're currently built, I know it's only May 20th, so there are pieces that could be added, but this team looks like it's going to be soft in the trenches, which is not what you want to be when you come down the stretch, particularly in cold weather games. So I think they're going to lose that game. And then the road game against the Jets, I mean, that could be to make the playoffs. Like, I have them in that game at that point, 10-6 going into the last game of the season. Depending on the way things go and the way records fall, both Miami and the Jets could be playing for a playoff game, a playoff berth. I have the Dolphins losing both games against Buffalo, and I have them at 10-6 going into the last game of the season. So I'm probably not picking Miami to win the division, even if they win this game. I want to say that they're going to win because I don't trust the Jets. I don't trust that the Jets are going to be that good. And I think if it's a one-game scenario at the end of the season, give me the Dolphins to figure it out. But I don't feel terribly confident about it. I feel like I do like 11-6. That's kind of where I've been sitting. If you take away the one stupid loss that I have them losing to Vegas, then, you know, I'm feeling, you know, then they're going into the last game 11-5. And then do they lose to go to 11-6? I feel pretty good about 11-6 being my schedule prediction.
So you say they're going to beat the Jets.
I say they're going to beat the Jets and they'll clinch a playoff berth on the last game of the season.
Very good. Brain, I have the Dolphins losing their final four games of the season.
Woo! After a 5-0 start?
After a 5-0 start. They were 5-0. This is how I imagine it. I had them at 5-0. At one point, I had them at 5-0, 5-1. 6-1, 6-2, 7-2, 8-2, 9-2. I had them at 9-2, dropping to 9-3, then getting up to 10-3 with a victory over the Jets. And I have them losing at Houston, at home against the 49ers, at Cleveland, and at the Jets. Why? Because until this team can show me that they can win those big road games against tough competitions late in the season, I don't believe that they can do it. So that's how I feel. So that's why I have the Dolphins. And are the Dolphins going to beat a defending NFC champion at home late in the season? Maybe they will, but I think, I don't know. I just believe that this is the same old Dolphins. This is what I think. They're going to, at this point, looking at the season, That's how I feel. That's how I feel this thing is going to go, and the Dolphins are going to finish the season at 10-7. Maybe that's good enough to still sneak into the playoffs because their start was so good. Terrific. And they make it as a wild card team, and they can travel to Kansas City or Cleveland or whatever it is and lose on the road in the first round of the playoffs because that's what they do. Or maybe they will prove me wrong and actually win those tough games, because here's the thing. We've talked about how important it's going to be for the Dolphins to be the number one seed so that they don't have to travel and play in the elements in the playoffs, right? We've talked about that, right? If this team is actually going to be good enough to do that, good enough to be that number one seed, it means that they're going to show that they can win those games late in the season and that they can go to those tough places in the cold weather and win those games. Because unless somehow the Dolphins come into the final 2 weeks of the season sitting at 15-0 miraculously, I think this is going to be a very tough situation for the Miami Dolphins. So that's just how I see it. And what that also leads me to, Brain.
Okay.
What that also leads me to is that it is time, once again, Brain. We haven't done this for a while, but it's time now. We're going to do it now. Brain, it's time to check your pulse.
You check your pulse if you're not fired up.
That's right. It is time, once again, for a Miami Dolphins Dolphins Talk Pulse Check. This is where we ask you for one word to describe how you are feeling right now about the Miami Dolphins. So if you're watching live on the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel and haven't smashed the like button, take a moment to do that. Smash the like button and then let us know in the comments what is one word to describe how you feel right now about the Miami Dolphins. If you're watching on the I Am a Miami Dolphin Fan Facebook page, tell us what is one word to describe how you feel about the Miami Dolphins right now. And Brain, I'm going to go first because it's a perfect segue based on the collapse that I see the Dolphins experiencing at the end of the season. Here it is. How do I feel about the Miami Dolphins right now? Okay. I feel okay. Why do I feel okay? Because, and granted, this is May 20th, right? Long way to go. Long way to change my feelings. And this is the way too early schedule prediction. So there's plenty of time for my mind to change about how this schedule is going to play out and how everything's going to play out. But here's how I feel. I feel okay. I think in a vacuum, I like really a lot of what the Dolphins have done this offseason. When you take it in the context of where this team has been and what this team has, the situation that this team has prepared itself for in the cap situation with some of the signings, with some of the, you know, with how things have played out for this team, it was understandable that Bob Hunt or Christian Wilkins and players like that were going to need to leave and they weren't going to be able to resign. And when you saw the numbers that those guys signed for elsewhere, the Dolphins were never competing with that. And I think what the Dolphins have done in light of that, you know, perfectly fine moves. I thought the draft was, I thought it was a fine draft for the Miami Dolphins. It was fine. I don't think it was outstanding. I also don't think it was bad. I think it was fine. And you've got the Dolphins making moves, playing within themselves in terms of, I think it's like an NBA thing and NFL teams just has to play within themselves. They have to play mistake-free football. And I feel like the Dolphins offseason has largely been about playing mistake-free football for the most part. In how they've gone. They haven't swung for the fences. They haven't brought any huge free agents at this point. They haven't splashed out a lot of money that they couldn't afford to spend. They haven't traded away future draft capital to bring in players. They've stayed within themselves. I mean, even the Odell Beckham signing, terrific signing. Some of the defensive players that they've brought in, Jordan Brooks, great signing. Aaron Brewer, great signing. You know, all within a vacuum of where they were. But when you look at the Dolphins team on paper right now, and we're going to get into like full roster breakdowns and stuff like that, and what should the Dolphins do post June 1st. We're going to talk about that on a later episode. But when I look at the Dolphins on paper right now, and I compare that to where the Dolphins were on paper, you know, around this time last year, it feels like the Dolphins are a worse team right now than they were last year. They've downgraded at center from Connor Williams to Aaron Brewer. That's a downgrade. You could say that they're about the same at tackle. Maybe they've upgraded if you want to count the draft. And some of the, you know, guards are still a question mark. The offensive line in general just doesn't feel great to me. And so I actually feel like the offensive line is worse than it was last season. And on the other side of the ball, you look at the linebacker room probably, you could make an argument that the linebacker room got a little better. I think you could even make an argument that in the secondary, they've gotten better. It feels to me that they've kind of moved sideways as opposed to actively getting better in the secondary. But I would not balk at somebody telling me that they got better in the secondary. But when you look at the defensive line, again, they've gotten worse on the defensive line. Okay. And so when I take all of that information and I look at it, I just feel okay. I have not changed from my initial thought coming into this offseason, was that we're looking at something of a transition year for the Dolphins, whether you want to call it a transition year, you want to take it, a retooling, whether you want to say they're taking a step back, whatever the case may be, I still feel like that's kind of what this year is for the Dolphins. Now, the way things have happened around them means that there is every chance that the Dolphins still could end up having a much better year this year than they had last year. But at the end of the day, how I feel right now, I just feel okay. I feel fine. I'm not fired up. I'm not hugely confident that there is anything that is going to be drastically different that makes the Dolphins a significantly better team in 2024 than they were in 2023, because just on paper looking at it, this is a team that is not as good as it was last year. And frankly, I don't know that there's a move that the Dolphins could make between now and the start of the season. I don't see any situation where the Dolphins' offensive line is suddenly better than it was. Could they make some moves to improve the defensive line and maybe replace Christian Wilkins and find somebody? There are a couple of things out there that could happen that could make me feel better about the defensive line. But again, knowing that Chubb and Phillips are question marks right now in terms of what you're going to get out of those guys, I just feel okay. I don't feel bad. I don't feel like, oh my God, this team is falling apart. It's a nightmare. I don't feel like that. I just feel like Robert Mays described the Miami Dolphins 2024 in terms of how the roster is being built as what is the art form? I think it's Japanese, when you take a bowl and you break the bowl and then you put it back together with like gold glue or something. You put it back together, you rebuild the bowl, and it looks beautiful and shiny, but it's the same bowl. Right. And that's kind of like what this Dolphins offseason has been. They smashed the bowl and they have kind of put it back together and tried to make it look beautiful. But at the end of the day, it's the same bowl. So I feel okay.
Kintsugi.
That's what this offseason is for the Dolphins. Kintsugi.
Also known as Kintsukuroi.
Yeah. They built the bowl, they smashed the bowl, and they put the bowl back together. But it's the same bowl! Brain, check your pulse.
All right, so...
Wait a minute, I gotta see what it... Before you check your pulse, I want to hear what everybody else had to say here. Let's see. Oh, everybody's talking to me. Everybody's talking about my heel turn on this show.
I mean, it was a pretty epic heel turn.
This is Jeff Harris's Cautious. Rhino's YTH. Says excited. Sea Devil says solid, unless Tua holds out. Mike is changing his to shocked after my heel turn on them. Laird Fentra says numb. JM Santos is despondent. Adrian G. Williams, fair to Midland. All one word. I love, I'm here for that. Wesley Gray says, ambitious choice is unimpressed. Let's see. What else do we got here? Let's see. And then we got, oh, we got a couple more. Brent Adamson says, hopeful. And Steven Smith says, explosive. All right, Brain, check your pulse. How you feeling?
I mean, here's the thing. And I mean, it is shocking where we're at right now. Because I actually, I mean, it wasn't what I would have done. And there are aspects of the way that this team has been built and decisions that have been made this offseason that I don't love and I have major question marks about. But in general, I've kind of liked what Chris Greer has done this offseason.
Uh-oh. Oh, my.
Because you have to frame everything, like, you have to frame it with the knowledge of knowing where we were at.
Yeah.
From a cap standpoint, with big money decisions that still need to be made down the road. Could the Dolphins have brought back... Here's where I struggle.
I totally agree with everything so far.
Okay. Here's where I struggle. Where I struggle is that the Dolphins could have easily brought back Robert Hunt and Christian Wilkins.
Easily?
Yeah, just by basically restructuring Tyreek Hill's contract.
Sure, but they didn't do that.
Right.
Because Tyreek Hill is probably about to...
Well, let me talk here.
Like, right, he's got one more season left with the Dolphins, probably.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, how can you sit here and say, well, we're playing for 2025 and then go into 2025 and say, oh, we're gonna trade Tyreek Hill? Like, I don't think that's what your plan is. If you're planning on winning in 2025, you're probably planning on Tyreek Hill still being part of the roster. Cause I don't really love the idea of trying to win in 2025 without your absolute best player. That said, I think that the Dolphins could have still accomplished everything that they accomplished this offseason and brought back Rob Hunt and Christian Wilkins just by restructuring Tyreek Hill. Granted, there was going to be a cap situation at some point, you know, whether that's 2025 or 2026. By making the moves that they made, by deciding to move on from Christian Wilkins and Bob Hunt, I think that they've lowered the ceiling for what this team could be this season. However, I think that they have extended their winning window. And with a lot of the moves that they've made, I think that they've softened the blow of losing some guys. I still think at this moment, May 20th, not only have they not replaced Robert Hunt or Christian Wilkins, but it seems unlikely that they're going to get suitable replacements for them. That said, it's this real experiment that's going on here because they've also gotten significantly better and deeper in the offensive skill positions. You now have a reliable tight end that can beat coverage. You have a third receiver that is worlds better. And I know that Odell Beckham Jr. is not the Odell Beckham Jr. from 5 years ago, or it might not even be the Odell Beckham that, you know, brought that helped lead the Rams on a Super Bowl run. But he was a very efficient player for the Ravens last year, coming off of an ACL injury, seemed to be playing his best football down the stretch. I think he's a significant upgrade over what we had at third receiver last year, whether you believe that was Braxton Berrios or Cedric Wilson or Chase Claypool. Odell Beckham Jr. is a huge upgrade, and you've got more competition there at the back end of that room. And you add in a Jalen Wright. Another year for Devon Achane, who looks like he's bulked up, and he, like, honestly, at his size and stature, proved to be, I think, tougher runner than I expected him to be. And I think the ceiling is probably much higher for him this year. Granted, there's question marks about his durability, but the weapons that they have right now on offense, I don't know. Maybe the offensive line doesn't need to protect for more than 2.5 seconds when you've got this many weapons. I really believe that there are things that they can do to mitigate that. Now, granted, I think they're built a certain way to perform really well when they're not going up against really, really good defenses. And so what's going to happen when you go up against those teams, particularly late in the season in cold weather environments? That still remains to be seen. My bigger concern is on the defensive side of the ball, because it's not just that you lost Christian Wilkins. It's that we don't know what we're going to have with Jalen Phillips to start the season. We don't know when we're getting Bradley Chubb back, and we're replacing them with Shaq Barrett. I mean, not to mention we lost Van Ginkle too. We're replacing them with Shaq Barrett and two rookies. And these two rookies that we got, while I didn't hate the picks, these guys are not necessarily run-stopping edge guys. And so we've got this whole, like, we're going to throw a bunch of shit at the wall and see what sticks at defensive tackle.
I swear, that's a swear.
Eh, it's the offseason. Nobody's watching. Only the 775 people that are watching right now. Anyway, whatever. We're going to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall. We're going to see what sticks at defensive tackle. I think we're going to, even the Jordan Brooks thing. Jordan Brooks is a better coverage linebacker than Jerome Baker. Yeah. I don't know if he's as good a run defender as Jerome Baker. Do we know what we're going to get from Channing Tindall? Are we going to get the Channing Tindall breakout? I'm not counting on it.
If we get something out of Channing Tindall, I will be shocked. I won't eat my hat, but I might put some salt and pepper on it.
Yeah, I think we're going to struggle to stop the run. And I think when it's early in the season and you can put up as many points as you can, it might not kill you. But when you get late in the season and games get more physical and you get into the cold weather games against good teams, you're going to need to be able to stop the run. And maybe we've got Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips back playing 100% at that point. And maybe we've figured some things out. Who knows? Maybe we've even added a defensive tackle at the, you know, towards the end of the season to bolster that position. I don't know. But I think that's a major question mark on May 20th, the way too early prediction. Again, I think we're going to struggle to stop the run. And I think this team is built to be very exciting early in the season. And then when things get tough and physical, I think they're built to swoon at the end of the season. And so that's kind of what I see. But at the end of the day,
did you have a pulse check or are you just
team? Do I have a word?
Yeah.
Here's my word.
And jeez, Louise, long-winded? Is that a word?
Patient. Like, you got to be patient for me to land my word here, for me to stick the landing.
Is that actually your word?
My word is patient, because not only do we need to wait to see what the finished product looks like when we get to the season, to get to the regular season. This team doesn't need to be built to win a game on May 20th. This team needs to be built to win a game when you get to the game, to week one against Jacksonville. But also, I still believe, even while you're still playing for 2024 and you're going to have all your goals to be as good as you could possibly be in 2024, and I think it's definitely a reachable goal to get to the playoffs, to win a playoff game, to make a deep run, I think those are reachable goals. I don't think the ceiling is as high as this team was last year or as high as what we wanted it to be going into this year as fans. But let's say, and granted, these are major question marks, but let's say that the draft picks work out.
Let's just say.
Let's say Chop Robinson going into his second year in the league is an absolute stud. Great. And let's say Patrick Paul can step in and be a solid left tackle. Huge question mark. I don't like the Patrick Paul pick. But let's say that it happens. It's not out of the realm of possibilities that that's going to happen. And if that happens, well, now the Dolphins have managed to put together a team that's in the same stratosphere as the team that they were previously. But instead of having this two-year window where it's like, we got to win now or this whole thing is getting blown up, all of a sudden, We've now locked up guys. We have all this draft capital. And if we need to go out and sign a guard or a defensive tackle, we can do that in one offseason. And we're built to do it. To where it's a lot easier to fill in those pieces because you have all of the other pieces that you need. And so I kind of like what Chris Greer's done. I don't hate it. I wish that we would have brought back Bob Hunt and Christian Wilkins because, again, I think you could have easily done it just by restructuring Tyreek Hill. And if you did that, I think the Dolphins would be without question the favorite to win the AFC East and it would have a very strong case to being one of the favorites in the entire league because they would have literally no weaknesses. The only weakness that people would point to is people would say, well, can Tua play big in down the stretch?
Sure.
Well, so what I love about that is that it comes back to the same idea of, well, if this, then that. And that is like what we are in the part of the season where that is like, that is what Dolphin fans thrive on. Because if this comes together, then we're going to be great. And if this happens, then we're going to be great. And we've got this and we're going to do that. It's the off season. It's when our hopes are high and everything is possible that the Dolphins are going to put it all together and that this is going to be the year. And there's always a possibility. And, you know, and that's what this time of year is all about. And I'll be honest. I'm not like feeling down on the team. I don't feel bad. I just feel kind of okay. I just feel okay about the team. I feel like, you know, like you said, I can see, and I think I've even said it as much, I can see a path forward where this team can be really good this season. And I can see a path forward where this team is really great in 25 and beyond. I can absolutely see it. But at this moment in time, I just feel okay. I'm not going to get carried away by optimism and hope, especially when looking at it on paper. As I said before, this team is not the same. This team is not better on paper than the team that we have last year. And to the guy who's saying, well, how are you saying you're not the sea devil in the chat? He says, Josh, you just predicted a total collapse. And I'm like, well, that's what the Dolphins do. It's what they always do. And so, again, this is a way too early prediction, and there's a lot of time for me to change my mind. It's May 20th, so a lot can happen between now and the start of the season, and it's possible that by the time we get to the season, I might feel better about things and feel like there's not a total, you know, that this team is not going to collapse down the stretch. But like I said, if they're not going to prove it to me, prove it to me, prove to me that you are the team that you have said you are, that you've learned something, that you're going to tough it out, that you're not going to be this finesse team, that you're going to be able to grind out tough wins in bad weather on the road against tough teams. And if you can do that, then absolutely, let's ride, baby. But right now, I just feel okay because, like I said, on paper, right now, this team is not as good as it was last year. That's it. That's all I have to say. And that's okay.
I would say... I don't disagree with you, but I would say it's comparable. And I would say with a couple of moves, you could make the case that it's better. And to do that while also being in better cap health long term is kind of amazing. The thing is that if you're going to do that, at some point you got to win.
Well, like, that's the thing. This entire long-term window for the Dolphins now comes down to there is no margin for error in what Chris Greer is doing, right? There's no margin for error in the roster build. If this team is going to compete and this team is going to be good, you need those draft picks to come good. You need to have these players that you signed to, you know, the volume of players that you've signed to replace Christian Wilkins, bringing in Anthony Weaver as your defensive coordinator. You need all of those things to come together and to congeal and to make it so that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And that is not outside the realm of possibility. It's just that at this point in time, I don't necessarily I don't know. I just don't know whether or not that's something that's going to happen. And that's okay. I'm just not getting carried away with it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I don't necessarily disagree with you on 2024 that their margin for error is more slim. But what I would argue is that if you went all in on this year and you went for trying to make the team better, even if you did what I wanted them to do,
sure,
I would say your margin for error as far as winning a Super Bowl is much more slim because you basically have to do it this year. And so anybody that you draft needs to be an instant contributor. Whereas if you've doing it the way that they've done it, yes, if they're going to win the Super Bowl this year, if they're going to make a huge leap this year, yes, they're going to need everybody that they've brought in, whether it's a free agent or a rookie, to really step up and make a big contribution and get and have other players step up and play better when the games matter most. I would argue that they've built a more stable foundation for the next few years where they do have a little bit of margin for error with a lot more draft capital and the flexibility to spend more money if they need to, which they wouldn't have if they went all in on this season. So it's just like, if you're mad about what they've done this year, then it's because you really want this team to make this huge leap this year. But if you really are of the belief that there wasn't really anything that this Dolphins team could really do to really secure themselves as a real Super Bowl contender this year, then you probably should like what Chris Greer has done this year.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like I've said before, it is not outside the realm of possibility that this Dolphins team goes and makes a run and goes all the way. It's not an impossible thing because of the way that things shake out. You know, there's a world where Anthony Weaver comes in and this defense congeals and comes together and is like significantly better than what anybody could have imagined. And there's a world where it's May. They could still bring in pieces. There are some rumors floating out there about some pieces that the Dolphins could bring in to really boost that defensive line still. Like, this is not the final puzzle, right? We know the Dolphins are going to have money freed up when the Xavien Howard money kicks in, when they restructure Tua. There are all kinds of things that are still yet to happen this offseason. So again, this is what I'm saying right now on May 20th. Long way to go. But to avoid talking in circles any further, this is where we're going to wrap it up. This has been a fun show. This show was a lot more fun than I expected it to be. So thank you to everybody for riding with us. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Again, like the video, leave us a comment. We appreciate it very much. Subscribe to the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel. Download, rate, review, and subscribe to the Same Old Dolphin Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, everywhere you get your podcasts. 5-star rating, positive review. Thank you very much, and make sure you're visiting DolphinsTalk.com each and every day. It's your one-stop shop for all things Miami Dolphins all through the offseason. Everything is going to be coming your way at DolphinsTalk.com, so make sure that you stick with us. And we've got some big announcements coming pretty soon, so keep your ears keep your ears and eyes peeled because we got some news coming to you, to the Dolphins Talk folks. So anyway, thanks everybody for joining us. We hope you had a good time, and we'll talk to you again probably, next week after that. We're going to be back. We'll be back soon. But until then, take care of yourselves and each other. And as always, go Dolphins!
Did I just become part of the Chris Greer fan club?